You're listening to The Bulletin with UBS, first broadcast on the 7th of June 2015 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking to China and the equity market bubble there and asking what's prompted this and the increasing recent volatility we've been seeing. We'll consider whether this could be set to continue, but also what might happen if the bubble bursts, both in China and beyond. We start with Angus Grigg, China correspondent for the Australian Financial Review based in Shanghai. What's his view of what lies behind both the bubble and increasing recent volatility in the market?
Well, I think you've got a few factors at work here. Firstly, you've got to understand that people here in China very strongly believe that this current stock market rally is a government-sanctioned rally. That is, that the government is supporting people putting their wealth into the market. Now, in any other place in the world, this would mean very little, but as you know, in China, the government remains a very powerful force. And so something changed in the mindset of people probably about 12 months ago, and they started to believe that the government was sanctioning this rally, and so they started to pour money into the market. But it's not traditional, what we call institutional investors, who are really driving this market. It's retail investors, not so much sort of mum and dad investors, but sort of higher end retail investors who are effectively acting like day traders. So they are not taking a long-term view on the fundamentals of a stock one way or the other. They are really trading on momentum and trading on the belief that this rally will continue because the Chinese government is sanctioning it.
James Purcell is cross-asset strategist at UBS Wealth Management.
So in terms of the increased volatility, when you've got a bull in a China shop, things do tend to get broken. So we've had increased volatility, which is mainly a function of the authorities trying to pull back on some of the margin lending, which has been rampant over the last few months.
When considering both the equity market bubble and recent volatility, it's important to consider the wider context of the Chinese economy, says Isabel Hilton, editor of China Dialogue.
Until relatively recently, there wasn't a lot Chinese could do with their money. They could put it into housing, which they did in very large numbers. And you have housing which is bought as investment and not lived in all over China, empty houses, people sitting there waiting for the price to go up. That has bad social effects because it prices out poorer people. Or you could stick it in a bank at negative interest rates, or you could spend on luxury goods, or you could just hope that it would last long enough to look after you in your old age. None of this was really putting money into the economy in any useful way. That was all right as long as China was on its long, exuberant boom, but that's now coming to an end, so you've got slowing growth rates. And all kinds of aspects of the Chinese economy are having to think about how they make a transition into a more responsive, more effective working system. If you're not going to let crony lending go on, and that's been widely signalled, then you have to turn to the stock market for funding of a better, more responsive, more efficient light industrial sector or technology sector. So the government wants to encourage confidence in the stock market. People are very willing to invest in something that gives returns. But the problem is that both the regulation of the stock market and the calibration of its behaviour are really immature.
Simon Smiles is UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth.
It's very easy as an outsider sitting in Zurich to be sceptical. You've got Shenzhen up 115% year to date. If you take the combined market capitalization increase across Shanghai and Shenzhen equities of about 4.6 trillion US this year, I mean, that's enough to purchase all of London property twice or persuade the entire Japanese economy to perform a year's work. And then obviously those crazy margin lending stats from last year, where margin lending quintupled. All of that, you know, raises the scepticism. But, you know, I was just in Hong Kong last week and talking to clients on the ground. I mean, they continue to look to buy the rally. Very little evidence or expectation that the market is going to fall in the near term. And I think it was a combination of a belief that the government will continue to ease policy and also a belief in the commitment of the government to further internationalize financial markets that are keeping our clients in the region more bullish than we are.
So that's what explains the bubble and recent volatility. But the next key question is, will these trends continue? We asked Angus Grigg.
That is the big question. Look, I think on all fundamental analysis, you'd say that many parts of the Chinese market is incredibly overvalued, particularly the smaller technology stocks which trade down on the second board in Shenzhen. They are trading at, you know, upwards of 100 times earnings. You know, on any fundamental analysis, this is completely overvalued. But then you look at some of the more sort of traditional bigger companies, and they are trading at sort of elevated levels, but certainly not as overvalued as some of the small technology stocks. So I guess you could probably say there might be a fairly dramatic pullback in some of those smaller companies, even as you see support for the larger, more established companies remain.
Does James Purcell share this view?
As long as you have the authorities willing the market higher and that you have ample liquidity in order to support it, then there is every probability that the market can go higher, regardless of the economic fundamentals or the deteriorating earnings trends.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look at what it could mean both for China and the rest of the world in the event that the bubble does indeed burst, and we'll explore whether recent developments are part of any larger trends. So what might happen if the stock bubble bursts? What would this mean for China and the rest of the world? Is it cause for worry? Isabel Hilton, again.
I think we just have to ride it out. I mean, I would worry if you were betting your farm on the Shanghai stock market. I'd probably say don't do that. And a lot of people will lose, I think, when it starts to slide again. So you have a risk of very unhappy punters, which is always bad news for the Chinese government, because unhappy punters in China tend to blame the government, and they're not always wrong. But I think that this is a process that the whole system has to go through as it matures. And in the end, if they get it right, you know, you will have a much better system, which will contribute to a much more stable growth in the Chinese economy than so far. Because the legacy of the old system, in which big state-owned enterprises could basically use the banks as their, you know, private piggy bank, was a huge debt overhang. You know, you have a lot of completely unviable big enterprises. And that money also was the peasant savings. You know, they don't benefit. And China has always industrialized on the back of the peasant savings. So at least this way, if the stock market does manage to mature, you spread the benefits. And in the end, you get a more discriminating access to finance.
When talking about bubbles bursting, it's important to remember, says Angus Grigg, that China has swapped a housing bubble for a stock market one.
Well, one of the curious things that's happened here in China is that essentially you've swapped a housing bubble for a stock market bubble. And so we had a decade really here in China where you had very, very strong housing market growth. And then when suddenly people woke up and realised that there was massive overcapacity in the housing market, almost overnight they pulled their money, their excess money out of the housing market, and they went for the stock market. So this shows that in a lot of way, these people are, they really are speculators. And if this money was to suddenly flow out of the market, well, it would need a new home. And at the moment, there's not a lot of new homes for money into China. So unless you saw a, you know, very big pickup in the housing market, then perhaps you would not necessarily think that you'll see a dramatic exit from the stock market. The other thing is that you have to remember here in China that people can't easily invest overseas. So there's actually not a lot of other options. Bank interest is very low here in China. You get negative real interest rates. The housing market looks to be massively oversupplied and, you know, therefore remain fairly depressed for the next couple of years. So really the only other option people have got is the stock market. And that's why we've seen this huge amount of money pour in.
Looking into the medium term, the real question isn't, will it burst, says Simon Smiles, but instead, will the authorities allow it to?
Given we're just at the start of what seems to be an ongoing process to liberalise financial markets and capital markets more broadly in China, it's hard to see how that policy objective is consistent with markets being allowed to crash dramatically. I mean, it's only very recently that foreign capital has in a more large-scale way been able to invest in domestic equities. Again, if the aim of the Chinese authorities is for this to continue, it's hardly an objective served by a major stock market correction. A similar dynamic can be seen in the currency markets. There's a lot of bearishness priced into currency forwards. However, again, particularly lead up to the October decision on the special drawing rights for the IMF, it's very hard to see how that policy objective of the Chinese government is well served by a significant depreciation in the Chinese currency. And talking to people on the ground, the firm view is the currency will be maintained at current levels or in fact appreciate in the lead up to that decision, which is very, very different to the views one gets in this part of the world or in the US, where again much more bearishness is priced into expectations.
Finally, on today's edition, we're asking whether all of this signifies any larger trends, for example, in opening up the capital account, making it easier for Chinese to invest in stocks and bonds overseas. Well, the Chinese government is trying to institute more rational investor behaviour, says Angus Grigg.
Well, I think what you're trying to see is the Chinese government is trying to institute a more sort of rational investor behaviour here. And so they are gradually liberalising interest rates here, making it, giving banks greater scope to charge or pay higher deposit rates. They're also gradually opening up the capital account here in China, which will make it easier for Chinese investors to invest in stocks and bonds overseas. And at the same time, they're increasing stock market links between, say, Shanghai and Hong Kong. There's talk of a Shenzhen Hong Kong Connect, possibly even a Shanghai-New York Stock Connect. So I guess the bigger trend here is that the Chinese government is very, very keen to be seen as a sort of wealth creator of the Chinese people. And they're doing this by giving them more options to invest, giving them more opportunities to invest overseas, but also liberalising the investment products market here so people can go into more conservative bond funds and fixed interest funds and sort of blue chip stock funds. So I think the trend here is in the right direction. It's just like everything in China, the sheer weight of money gets in front of the policy a lot of times.
Wenjie Liu is China equity strategist for UBS in Shanghai. When he looks into the medium term, he too identifies regulatory issues as key to setting the agenda. The
domestic regulators, they now have limited room to manoeuvre to contain the domestic liquidity, which is obviously quite excessive. So the natural solution is kind of to guide the domestic capital to overseas markets, which are much more reasonable valued. Therefore, they do intend to accelerate deregulation on cross-border investment.
James Purcell feels that what we're seeing is a clear move by the authorities.
This is a clear move by the authorities to try and de-lever their economy by attracting foreign capital into the market, like we've seen with many of the ETFs now including China A shares for the first time. It gives an opportunity for companies to raise equity finance rather than debt finance. This is a concerted plan by the government to de-lever the economy.
And rounding up the show, Simon Smiles in Zurich agrees that what we've seen does indeed signify a larger trend.
Look, I think it is. I mean, the size of the increase in the foreign capacity to purchase domestic shares and also for Chinese money to purchase Hong Kong shares, you know, it was clearly dwarfed by the increase in trading activity in both markets. So there does seem to be an element of front-running, if you will, an expectation of continued capital and financial market liberalisation. That being said, you know, this is a trend that seems likely at this stage to continue. It's a trend that at least people on the ground and the clients I speak to in the region expect the Chinese government to remain committed towards. And, you know, we're seeing increasing evidence of ETF providers and index makers, you know, looking to include A shares into the indices for the first time. We saw Vanguard announce that a $70 billion EM equity ETF will add 5.6% of the fund into China A shares. And that alone implies a $4 billion flow into Chinese A shares in the next couple of weeks from that one fund. Now, so there is a building evidence that of the internationalisation of the Chinese equity market.
And that's Simon Smiles bringing us to the end of this 35th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Listen again and find out more at monocle.com or catch up via iTunes or SoundCloud. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.